You bring your phone everywhere. Work, school, the movies. Now you can bring it to an Xfinity store for an easy way to switch to Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. You can get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet at no extra cost, so all you pay for is data. It's never been easier to switch to Xfinity Mobile and keep the phone you love. Click here to see how. Sorry, I gotta take this. Restrictions apply. Limited to select mobile phones. Requires activation of a new line of Xfinity Mobile. Up to 5 devices per account. New Xfinity Internet customers limited to up to 2 lines pending activation of Internet service.
Previously on Coffee with Kenobi.
Was the biggest jaw-dropping moment in Star Wars since I Am Your Father. Now, to be clear, it's not as big or as important or significant as I Am Your Father. I mean, that's the ultimate, right? But I can't think of anything in Star Wars that blew me away and just made my jaw drop the way that this did with what happened.
You mean it's even bigger than when Jar Jar hands over the power to the Emperor? I don't know, Dan.
This is James Arnold Taylor, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi. I have a good feeling about this.
Hello, and welcome to show number 112 of Coffee with Kenobi, your spoiler-free place for Star Wars discussion, analysis, and rhetoric. I'm your host, Dan Z, drinking coffee out of a blue Lucasfilm coffee mug. Thank you so much for joining me today as we sit back and have some Star Wars conversation. We hope to make you think about the mythology of Star Wars in a whole new way, and maybe laugh a little bit in the process. On today's special show, we are doing a crossover with Rebels Reactions to discuss the series finale of Star Wars Rebels. Part one will be here, and the second half of our conversation will be on Rebels Reactions. There will be no news segment, as the entire show will be all about A Fool's Hope and family reunion and farewell. So pull up a chair, grab your favorite coffee mug, and let's have some coffee with Kenobi.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
I am happy to report that I have 14 miles in, and that means I have earned my Star Wars Run Disney medal. I'm really excited about this. I cannot wait to receive it. It's probably the hardest Star Wars collectible that I've ever earned, but I like it so much I think I'm going to try to continue running because I just feel different. I feel like I have more energy throughout the day, and it's just a good feeling. I mean, I get why people run now. I understand it. I can't wait to see this thing, and I will put pictures of it on Instagram and all over Coffee with Kenobi social media. And I need your help on something. I am debating having a weekly or bi-weekly CWK Facebook live conversation with everyone, where we can interact and talk about anything on your mind in real time. Please drop me a line and let me know if this is something you would be interested in. Now, let's talk about this amazing series finale. Let's bring in our guests.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first?
Joining us today for a cup of coffee are many of your favorites from Coffee with Kenobi and Star Wars fandom. First up, we have Rebels Reconnaissance writer Craig Dickinson.
Hey, Dan. Good to be here.
Good to have you, bud. You were on for the very first show and where we talked about the first episode of Rebels, so we had to have you on for the finale. And speaking of having to have on, and as Rebels, Rebels Reactions host Aaron Harris is with us.
Hey, Dan. Craig, how are y'all doing tonight?
Excited.
It's going to be a fun discussion.
That's very fun. And speaking of exciting, CWK newsman, my little buddy, Tom Gross.
You went there. Oh, man.
We had a debate at lunch how I was going to introduce him.
Well, you went there. And hey, it's great to be on the show with, wow, what a great cast of people to talk. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Last but not least, Rebels Reactions frequent co-host, Dave Motters.
Hey, guys, and hello, Star Wars fans.
Hello, hello. So, and again, we, as I said at the top of the show, this is part one of the look at the series finale. And overall, I guess maybe in about 30 seconds or so apiece, I'm going to ask each of you what you kind of thought overall.
Oh, yeah, I just was just so overwhelmed by how everything is tied together in these episodes that everybody's back and plot points that we thought were filler are paid off. Like virtually everything is paid off. And it's just such a reward for those of us that have watched every episode so critically, just to see those things come back. And those, it just feels like those were left for us that have paid such close attention.
Watching Rebels from episode one, this has probably been my absolute favorite episode. And unfortunately it's the last one. This hit every point of interest, brought back every character you loved, and it basically preached to the choir, because it just brought back to the point something I have said time and time again on reactions, is there's no such thing as filler in Star Wars. Everything has a meaning. Everything has its purpose. And this episode proved it. It was just a lot of fun, very emotional. And it just blew my mind time and time again. Every time I've watched it 3 times already. And every time I watch it, it still blows me away.
Yeah, I thought, I have to reflect what has already been said about it all coming together here. But what I really appreciated about episode 14 is you know, our main characters are still the central focal point, and just everybody that just fills it and makes it so rich. But we don't lose the focus of the main character stories. So that's what has resonated with me.
And Dave, what do you think?
Absolutely. Just piggybacking on all the other guys. It's incredible. One of the things that I was thinking about as I was watching this is just the creativity is just staggering. I think it's one thing to be creative for a while, but to be this creative, throughout 4 years, that is not an easy feat to do. I think, Dan, sometimes when you've talked about Michael Jordan, it's one thing to win one NBA championship, but to win 6, it's just so, so difficult. And to be this way with Dave Filoni and this whole crew, it just strikes me, they have been creative for 4 straight years. And that is, it's one thing to do it for a few episodes, but to do it for 4 years is unreal.
I love that Michael Jordan compares, just like in Jordan's last game when he fakes out Byron Russell, which I still think was not a foul. This was a great ending. I mean, this is the thing I wrote about this for talking points. My last talking points, of course, for the show that was released. Often finales are hard to live up. This did it. This did it on a lot of levels. Oh, I will say, you said, Aaron, this was your favorite.
That is correct. Out of all of them that I've watched, and I watched every single one, I've had the opportunity to review the majority of them, and it's just by far has become my favorite out of all of them, because it is firing on more cylinders than we can count. I mean, to the point that we're covering it on both of our shows. I mean, because there's so much involved in this. In this episode, in this finale. So, I mean, yes, definitely by far my favorite.
Cool. Well, I still have to go with Twin Sons. I can't do that otherwise. But a shorter episode, or 22-minute episode, really, which is normal, and that was called A Fool's Hope, to get some of Rex's old friends. They're basically getting the band back together. And Ezra starts by recruiting some of the clones.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised at all that Wolf and Gregor came back, and that was a welcome thing to see. And seeing them on the AT-AT was a great callback to an earlier episode. And seeing that they upgraded was amazing. And of course, seeing Hondo is always great. He's not in these episodes too much, but I think just the right amount. What I found was really interesting was seeing Ketsu Anyu there. And I'm going to say something about this in my review, but the fact that she's not wearing a helmet at all, I thought was really kind of an interesting choice, and what that means about her character development. But everybody just jumps on board. It was interesting after the last time we saw those guys that they were, kind of reticent to join. And now it's like, yep, Ezra needs us. And that's just kind of what everybody said, was Ezra needs us, so let's go. And that was just, he's meant so much to us as fans, and apparently so much to these other characters too, that it's like, if he's in need, then, whatever it takes, I'm there.
Very, very clearly and poignantly in the finale. And it's absolutely evident with Hondo, of all people. Hondo says, I would do anything for that boy. A really, really powerful, beautiful moment. I don't know that Hondo's ever been truly sincere, and you can tell this wasn't a con, this wasn't a gimmick or a game. He really likes Ezra. They have mutual respect. And I don't know if I would say admiration, but I think maybe from Hondo's point of view, that's certainly the case. And Ezra is just really good with people, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that was one of the best moments of the opening of this episode, was everybody getting together, committing to helping Ezra, and seeing that kind of sincerity from Hondo, who is a character who really hasn't had a sincere bone in his body throughout the Clone Wars, or even through this. You could tell he was sincere, and he does care for Ezra, because Ezra is the only one really amongst anybody on that Ghost Crew that ever gave him a fair shake. And I think that earned him a lot of respect from Hondo. So when the plan is laid out, said, we're going to do this for Ezra, it was, you know, absolutely, I'll do anything for that boy. I mean, it is almost a fatherly thing, I'll do anything for him type of deal. So, yeah, it was really moving. I really was touched by that.
Really, I have to say, going off of everything you said with all the bringing the band back together kind of theme, I felt like I was watching George Bailey. and all of these friends come to support him. And when you talk about the sincerity of Hondo, you know, erasing his debts, not Ezra's debts, but like, you know, the whole, I thought it was great. The one person that I was really looking forward to, I don't know if there's anyone in this whole group that any of you were missing, but the one I was looking for, and probably wasn't there because he wasn't much of a warrior or a fighter, but I really missed seeing Quarry.
So now we've established again that we've got a lot of the crew back, a lot of people from season one and whatnot, and just sort of spring claims. But Ryder is someone that has been pretty prevalent on Lothal, and he shows us that he is a traitor, supposedly. Now, when you first saw this, Tom, did you think he was actually going to betray them, or do you think that was part of the plan?
I felt hook, line, and sinker. And he was convincing to me, really? And he felt, and I did. You know, Dan, I'm a sucker for just sinking my teeth into a good story and taking it for what I'm seeing. So I fell for it. I thought it was legit. I wondered if there would be something in the background until Price shows up, and I was like, I guess it was the real deal.
Right. No. And when I was watching it, at first I thought, oh, please let this be part of their plan. Please let this not be real. Unfortunately, it wasn't, because it just seemed like such a rash switch. But, you know, Governor Price falls for it, and that's perfect for her, because as with everyone who's evil, especially in these episodes, they continually underestimate their opponent. And I think we have sort of underestimated at times how clever Hondo is, because he has this beautiful hyperspace lane plan. And Dave, tell us about that and kind of what you thought was going on there.
Oh my gosh, Hondo's cracking me up when he's trying to count the number of times he's, I think, been run over in the hyperspace lane. He couldn't keep track. Hondo didn't have enough fingers to keep track of that.
Just a lot.
I thought it was great. It just had me on the edge of my seat. You know, is this plan going to work? And they're constantly trying to break through that blockade there around Lothal. But I would say this, that I think, like Tom, this is probably worse. Like, I remember Ezra saying, and get the kind of Dave Filoni tip in the hat, that Ezra says, well, there's one person that can help us, you know, get into the capital city. And then I had to think about that. And then even though I still thought, you know, because the next clip, I think they're showing Governor Price, just like Tom, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, he's double crossing him. This is unbelievable. And so, yeah, I'm, you know, the psychologist falls for it. I loved it. So I thought he was going to betray him.
Right. Well, that's actually a good place for us to pause and take our first break, because there is some interesting psychology that happens pretty soon after this exciting battle that takes place in Fool's Hope. So we'll go ahead and take our first break, and we will return with the second part of the Star Wars Rebels series finale. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
This is Coffee with Kenobi. Oh, pass the cream, would you?
Harry's Razors. What do I love about Harry's Razors? Well, honestly, the shave is great. I love the feel of the razor that they send. The shaving gel is great. It's just very convenient, very easy, and very affordable. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy are two ordinary guys who are fed up with getting charged an arm and a leg for razor blades, so they started Harry's to fix shaving. And Harry stripped out the unnecessary features like a vibrating handle, heating blades, 15 lubricated strips, etc., and the unnecessary cost to deliver customers one perfect razor at an amazing price. A good shave honestly comes down to good blades, as you know, so Harry's owns this factory, which is great, because that means they're able to deliver amazing quality blades for just $2 a blade compared to the $4 or more you're going to pay at the drugstore. And all products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades, they're going to give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up for Harry's at harrys.com/CWKFamily. Claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. A $13 value for free when you sign up. Just cover that $3 shipping. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, which I mentioned before smells really, really good and lathers up great, and a travel blade cover. To get your free trial set, go to harrys.com/CWKFamily right now. Coffee with Kenobi is sponsored by the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, The Last Jedi, and much more. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. I'd like to give a really special shout out to our CWK Patreon contributors. And I'm talking about wonderful people like Ben Elkington, Terry Lee, Dennis Keithley, Aaron Harris, Angela Souse, Mediocre Jedi, Ben Brophy, Daz Davies, Tyler Wiggins, Christo Hayding, Christian Dale, Jason Hall, Brian McKinney, Connie Shee, Mike Audette, Jared Cantor, BJ Smith, Eric Struthers, Nick Deco, and Mark Suter. We have done some more revamping with our CWK Patreon page. One of the things that I think is really cool is we have more incentives, like you can get a CWK phone case. And of course, there's still options for you to join the show with me for 4 times in 1 month, which is really, really fun. And we're doing some things like adding probably an extra show very, very soon. So be on the lookout for that. I'm thinking, and I'm open to any ideas that you might have, of course. But I think adding an extra show or two every month for contributors of $5 or more would be really, really cool. So I think I would like to do that. But what I would like from you is to let me know what you would like to see or what you would like to hear more accurately from a special CWK Patreon show coming to you probably twice a month. So let me know. Go ahead and send us an email at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com or danz@coffeewithkenobi.com. Thank you so very much. Hey, Star Wars fans, huge news. Finn himself, John Boyega, is coming to AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. Get ready to geek out March 30th through April 1st of 2018. For more info and tickets, visit www.awesomecon.com. We are back, and as promised, we're going to look a bit at the psychology of what happens here. Before we do that, we had this incredibly epic battle with Loth Wolves coming to the aid of the Rebellion. This is a very powerful mythological construct. Craig, talk to me about kind of how nature plays a part, particularly in this scene.
Yeah, you know, it's a thing that we've seen in Rebels a lot, and it really harkens back to George Lucas's earliest things about how nature triumphs over technology, whether it be Ewoks over the Empire, or we've seen, you know, everything from the Fearnox to the Purrgil to the name escapes me, but there was some flying creatures in the first episode. We met the Inquisitor that Hera teamed up with. It just repeated instances where nature, in this case, the Loth Wolves, are fighting on the side of the rebels against the Empire. And it's just one more of those things that's been seeded throughout the series and showing, you know, Ezra's connection with everything from the little Loth cats to the Purrgil of all shapes and sizes. So it's just another payoff and just that consistent theme, which was just kind of cool to see. Yep, there it is again. It's just this echo. And it's just powerful to see them have been built in as allies and with Kanan's connection to them and all that. So they're very close to the Force. And it looks like in this case, the Force willed that the Empire would be defeated this day.
I think that's an interesting way to look at these wolves. And there's a stunning image, of course, that we've all seen, this publicity photo of Ezra with his lightsaber ignited and the wolves behind him, and the way that they are lit. You can just kind of see the eyes of the wolves and you can tell they're behind him. And Ezra's, you know, you can see everything about him. He's in full color. very, very powerful. What I really, really, really like about that is it's very much a callback to the Phrynox in season one. And they talk about this on StarWars.com too, but Ezra is in a similar situation where he's got these dangerous creatures behind him. But in this one, there's no dark side temptation. He's more in control of his emotions. He's able to focus on what is important. And it's also very selfless too. And I thought that was just a beautiful way to show his growth. Now, speaking of growth, we kind of come to an interesting part, Aaron, where Ezra, you know, he says, not until we chase the Empire from Lothal and show the galaxy that they can be defeated. So he has to come up with a sort of a plan. But let's talk a little bit about Governor Price. And she's quickly running up being one of our least favorite characters, obviously. But tell me what you thought about her plan, how she was treating the rebels, and then how they convinced her to sort of at least help them out, albeit not willingly.
You know, Price has been one of those characters when she was first introduced. I just kind of wrote it off as a weak side character. Then I read the Thrawn book, and the Thrawn book told her backstory and basically put her in a new light for me, and I had a lot of respect for her after that. Her back's against the wall at this point in the story. She knows she's in trouble. She blew up the fuel depot. Even though she killed Kanan in the process, she blew up the fuel depot and cost Thrawn his TIE Defender project. So her back's against the wall. She has to get these rebels in, she's willing to believe anything at this point, which is why she walks right into this, obviously, not obviously, because I kind of thought Ryder had gone 180 on him too, but
rogue.
Yeah, he'd gone rogue. So that was definitely a well-constructed plan, and she fell right into that trap. And the way they convince her with those wolves, I mean, seeing her just cowering there, don't let them eat me, don't let them eat me, was just how far this person who had built herself up from just a, if you haven't read the Thrawn book, I'm going to throw out some spoilers, so just go read it, from the daughter of a mining family to become the governor of Lothal, and all the deceit and work she had to put into that, just now to see her cowering under a giant wolf, willing to cut any kind of deal she can at that point. And I think that was, it was definitely a turn in the character there. We're starting to see the strength she did show starting to crack at this point, because, I mean, when people get their back against the wall, they get desperate, and she's beyond desperate at this point. She's willing to do whatever she can. Well, willing to do what she can to survive.
Well, absolutely. And this is somewhat a piece of dramatic irony, but maybe it isn't, because the first time I saw this, I really thought, is he actually going to let this wolf eat her or bite her or injure her? And I wasn't sure where they were going to go with it, and I should have known better, but they obviously didn't. But Tom, is there even a part of you that thought, they're using sort of bullying and intimidation? Now, this is war, and she's obviously awful, and she helps murder his closest friend. But it's an interesting tactic. I'm not saying it's a bad tactic, and I'm not saying I wouldn't have done it myself, but I thought it was a very unique choice to use these wolves as potentially, basically wouldn't be any different than holding a blaster up to her head, would it?
No, I don't think so. I thought it was very appropriate, and especially now hearing some of her backstory, I think it's even more appropriate that a loath wolf would be used to coerce her into helping the rebels. But I'm just trying to think, is it much different than a blast? See, I see a blaster as being a lot more cold. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Well, it's interesting. You just brought up something interesting. So the loaf wolves, they're obviously very much ensconced into the spiritual side of Lothal, if a planet can have a spiritual side. And through the Force, we know, especially through the series and through The Last Jedi, that it can. So if this wolf represents, you know, kind of the passion and the fire of being a citizen of Lothal, and so does Governor Price. But now they are basically both using their anger and their fury in very unique ways. It very much kind of backfires on her. And I also like the fact that this wolf is white. So it shows hope, and it basically shows the best side of the protective side of Lothal, which I thought was very powerful.
Right. And, you know, as you were just mentioning, you know, I think it's so powerful that, you know, here she represents this mechanical empire, mm-hmm. and the Lothwolf is the spiritual of the force, the planet, however we're going to look at it. And it's kind of refreshing for me as a viewer to see that, you know, the mechanical, heartless, cold empire, you know, ultimately fails to nature here.
It's very, very true. I think there's something neat there. Anyone else want to weigh in on the wolves in that scene and how Ezra uses them? Again, I don't think it's he was being bad or being unethical. I just thought it was a very interesting choice.
But I think at that point, you know, the wolves were his army. You know, that was who he had at the time. And you know, I didn't think for a second that he was going to let the wolf end her. You know, I didn't feel that was where I think she was so full of fear that she could believe that. But I think for him, that was just like, this is my army. This is what I have control over. And to see essentially that he has control over, you know, what a wild animal is, that speaks to Ezra's power too. And, you know, don't mess with this level of control over nature too. So it was an intimidation factor, I think, for sure. But it just set Ezra up as, you know, someone definitely to be reckoned with.
Right. Well, I completely agree with that. And so let's go ahead, and that's a good place to end this segment. Let's go ahead and take our next break. And when we return, we're going to talk with our hosts here about who the actual fool is in A Fool's Hope. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Greetings. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi family members, we have got some amazing, amazing news. John Boyega Finn himself is coming to AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. Get ready to geek out March 30th to April 1st, and you can look on www.awesomecon.com for all the information. And he's not the only one there. We've got people like Dave Bautista, Jeremy Bullock, Stephen Amell from Green Arrow, Sean Gunn from Guardians of the Galaxy, Stan Lee, the Stan Lee from, of course, Marvel Comics fame, Tom Welling from Smallville. Everybody's there. AwesomeCon is an amazing event that Washington, D.C. holds every year. It's located at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C., 801 Mount Vernon Place. And if you are in Washington, D.C., this is the way you can meet Finn. I mean, he doesn't make a lot of convention appearances, so knowing that he's going to be there is incredible. So be sure to tell him that Coffee with Kenobi sent you, and we will have news later on a giveaway for you to get tickets to AwesomeCon. So don't forget, Washington, D.C., March 30th to April 1st, get your chance to see John Boyega, Finn himself.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app features incredible images from many aspects of the saga, including the original trilogy, the prequels, The Clone Wars, Rebels, The Force Awakens, and Rogue One. It's the quality you have come to expect from Topps. It's also easy to get into and really fun too. Your favorite Star Wars characters, scenes, and moments are in every pack. To get started, download the app for free from iTunes or Google Play, and then be sure to open the app each day for free credits to spend on card packs from the canteen. Plus, if you can't get what you're looking for, there's a place to trade with your friends as you complete your Star Wars collection. And if you're an experienced collector, there are exclusive cards, special inserts, and autograph opportunities for you to enjoy. Don't worry about missing the cards and sets you want either, as you can sign up for notifications right on the app. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps can be downloaded for free from iTunes or Google Play. Be sure to download the app and start your collection today. The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps is available now. And remember, these are the cards you're looking for.
Okay, now we are back for our third segment, and we're going to talk about Kallus because he has some really poignant things that he says to Governor Price. But before that, I had teased that we were going to look at who the fool is in this story, because the title of this episode, of course, is A Fool's Hope. Who is the fool in this, Dave? And what does that mean?
Yeah, I thought of multiple meanings for this title. Obviously, having hope in it is critical. I go back to A New Hope. But I think of Obi-Wan's, right? Who's the fool, right? The one who follows them, or the actual fool? In this case, the sense I get is that it's the Empire's view of Ezra and his plan from Governor Price's view of him and so on and so forth. But a lot of times, you know, the rebels can look like fools, right? They're always called that or called rebel scum. But, you know, Ezra, I think, you know, is not. He believes in the plan and it works. So that's my initial take on it, is that it would be the Empire's view of him as, it's just this foolish hope. You're not going to be able to do it. And in fact, tying it back to the previous segment, you know, where Aaron was commenting on Price being willing to do this when they're up in that Imperial, help me with the name of the ship, gunship, Imperial gunship, they're going back. You know, she like laughs at them, right? She goes, gosh, of course I'll give the correct codes, and because this is even crazier than I thought. So that's my initial view, is that it's Price, the Empire, all their view is that's Ezra, and he's a fool for doing this. But we know that he's not.
Right. I really like your interpretation. Does anyone else want to weigh in on this before we move on?
I can't top David.
He just nailed it, yeah. You know, it says on StarWars.com that it's referencing the quote from Gandalf, and I knew I'd heard that quote before. Like, mm-hmm. I had to access that part of my brain. And so for me, it's, you know, just to kind of add on to that it's hope that's real, but it's such a thin line, it has to thread the needle for it to work. So many things had to fall into place for Ezra's plan to work, even though it was so well planned out with all of the different variations that he had accounted for, which is remarkable as you go through. You keep thinking, well, he's been outclassed here, and then, well, no, he's got a contingency for that. But it is so risky, I guess, is kind of just what I would go back to, that it would, like, only a fool would hope that this would work. But, you know, again, who is the more foolish? You know, it works. So apparently it's not that foolish.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Return of the King reference in A Fool's Hope, because this is Gandalf speaking with Pippin, and this is towards the end of the book, and the third movie, which was the one that won Best Picture. And basically, in that story, Pippin is being referred to as the fool, and Gandalf is kind of patting him on the head or the back. But I don't, and it's sort of like that's kind of sweet little guy, you think we can do this. But Gandalf thinks they can do it too. And this is very much ties into, I think you could go biblical with this, and you could say, you know, the faith of a child is something that Jesus loved and was so drawn to, is because it was completely innocent and full of hope. So to be foolish here might not necessarily mean that you're actually a fool or an idiot, but more like it's a very innocent way to, and they're not innocent here, but it's a very interesting way for someone to think that they can actually conquer the Empire, right? The mighty Empire, who's literally stuck their tentacles into this planet, really, with everything they've done with the mining and all the other things they've done throughout this series. So I really like that, because it's very, very ironic. And irony has been a great part of Star Wars. It could also be referring to Governor Price. Maybe she's the fool, and her hope is that the rebels are just going to run themselves in their corner. But that is, of course, not the case. And everyone is speechless.
I'm floored.
So many profound thoughts.
I'm deep in thought.
Senseless.
All right. Well, let's talk about Kallus.
A lot in the last few weeks.
That's right. Let's talk about Kallus, and he has a run-in with Governor Price. Of course, they have a history together, serving in the Empire, and she calls him basically a traitor and you betrayed your empire. And he says, the day I betrayed your empire is the day I stopped betraying myself. Callus is someone who's been fascinating and much more complex than many characters on this actual entire show. The term complex character is thrown around quite a bit, but to be really a complex character, there has to be legitimate growth, legitimate change, and legitimate flaws. So, Craig, I'm sure, I mean, being a student of literature yourself, talk to me kind of about Callus and where he has come and how so beautifully it's wrapped up in that statement.
You know, I think back to the first episode that we reviewed and how we all seemed to really like Callus and that he was a villain that was formidable. He didn't, you know, you actually almost rooted for him. Even though he was the bad guy, he was always very capable, very intelligent, and even bested Zeb in combat. So he was a guy that you kind of respected. And just, you know, another thing where they seeded things slowly but surely that he was going to turn. You know, he was one of those guys that had integrity and believed in what he was doing. And after seeing time and time again that, you know, he is being betrayed. You know, his ideals are being betrayed by the Empire. That, you know, maybe it makes more sense if I go the other way. And so, just a natural progression. He just felt his motivation seemed real, and he seemed like a realistic character.
I certainly agree with that 100%. He's fascinating, as I mentioned, and he's the real deal. There were times, very brief times throughout this series, where I thought, I hope he stays good. They've done a lot to keep him there. And I'm glad that it ended the way it did. He's very similar to Finn in a way, because he goes back to the Empire or the First Order, and, you know, he could put himself in a very, very bad spot, but this is how strongly he believes in the cause. Let's talk a little bit about the foreshadowing between Ezra and Sabine and kind of the connection they show in these transports. And I know since the beginning of this, and Dave comments on this on Rebels Recon, he says, you know, everyone seems to want to ship these two, but, you know, that isn't the case. And I've never really thought that they were going to end up together romantically. I'm extremely glad that they didn't, because I don't think everyone needs to be paired up. And I think their relationship is very, very, it's a very, very positive thing, a very, very nurturing thing. And they're very much equals. And I love what they did here with them. Just that little thing on the ship. Aaron, talk to me about Ezra and Sabine.
You know, Ezra and Sabine were two of my favorite characters besides Chopper throughout this whole series, because we got to see them grow up together. We got to see him grow. We got to see Ezra grow up as a Jedi. We get to see Sabine grow up into this fantastic warrior as she goes on. And she got to experience some of the same things Ezra experienced going through his Jedi training when Kanan was trying to train her with the Darksaber. So they've experienced some of that same frustration together, and they've been the youngest in the crew for a while. So they are on the same beat per se. And so it just seemed logical seeing them in this situation together, just, you know, being able to work together as close knit as they could. I, you know, as much as Ezra trusted everybody else on that crew, I think out of everybody, because of how close of an age that we had between him and Sabine and how close of a friendship they developed and mutual respect for each other, obviously from these episodes, we could see she's the one he trusts the most. She helps him make his escape to when he surrenders to Thrawn. I mean, everybody else is telling him, we're not going to do it, we're going to find another way. He's like, okay, fine, find another way. And as they're discussing it, I mean, they exchanged that one look. She knew exactly what he was thinking, and she helped them do it, helped them make that escape. I mean, there's such a unique, I would say brother and sisterly bond, because they do have their, you know, picking on each other moments, but, you know, sure. But they're very close like that.
Yeah.
And
they're really good friends.
Absolutely.
And they have fought together. I mean, think about this. He was instrumental in helping her liberate Mandalore. And now she is not necessarily turning the favor, because it's not a favor. I don't think that they look at it like that. They care about each other. And I think it's really unique, and it's really, really cool to see the strong friendship between opposite sexes. So let's go ahead and take our last break. And when we come back, we will close out the first part of our discussion of the Star Wars Rebels finale. This is Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee, tea, or me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's Coffee with Kenobi.
Coffee with Kenobi was sponsored by the Star Wars digital card trader collecting app from Topps. If you love Star Wars and love the excitement of chasing your favorite Star Wars collectibles, the Star Wars digital card trader collecting app from Topps is for you. Download the free app from iTunes or Google Play and collect your favorite images from the classic 1977 Star Wars cards to the Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, The Force Awakens, Rogue One, and now The Last Jedi. Collect and trade with friends new and old through the Star Wars digital card trader collecting app from Topps. These are the cards you're looking for. Okay, we are back, and we have another exciting showdown. It is between Rook and the Loth Wolf. Rook is someone, Tom, that we were promised back in Star Wars Celebration Orlando that he was going to appear. I always was drawn to this character in the Thrawn trilogy that Timothy Zahn wrote in the early 90s. On this series, I mean, whenever he's on, I'm concerned for the safety of the Rebels crew because, you know, again, since this is a show where we don't really know where the characters are going to end up, there's real cost, there's real reason to be concerned. But he takes on a Loth Wolf. How did you feel about Rook in this particular scene? It was nice to see him scared, but what do you think about Rook?
Well, you know, from our conversation after last week's episode, that I really just wanted Zeb to keep waylaying him. And I'm with you. I knew it wasn't going to happen. But internally, I have to say, if there's a character I absolutely positively hate from a character standpoint, from his behavior, not as a character, it's Rook. And so when he faced off against the Loth Wolf in this one, oh, I was so happy because,
cool to see him scared, the bully.
Yes. Yeah. He definitely met his match. And I've always seen Rook more as a creature than as a person.
Humanoid. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for him to face off against something that's more his equal, I guess, I don't know. I was really happy about that. And, of course, enjoyed the moment where he's thrown over the cliff thinking that that was going to be it. I thought here, finally, the Loth Wolf does what Zeb couldn't, and it didn't matter anyway because, well, he wasn't done.
True. Well, that's true. And you almost can kind of expect that. I'm sure we all did. I really like something you just said triggered something I was just thinking about earlier. The Loth Wolf in many ways is more human than Rook. And it's not because there's not anthropomorphized, but it is empathetic. And it does appear to have compassion, whether that could be instinct or not. We could have a whole discussion on, you know, nature versus nurture in this particular thing. But let's go on to Protocol 13. Star Wars is very, very... It uses a lot of numbers, and there's a lot of numbers that we relate to, you know, subblock 1138, things like that, you know, Order 66. Protocol 13, Dave, that's the lockdown order for the Empire. What do you think about that? And why, by the way, is Ryder the voice mimic? Since when is he the parrot of the group?
Right. Usually it's Ezra, right? Doing it on the war crawler in a previous episode, right? trying to imitate somebody he's not. Yeah, I mean, I thought of Mon Mothma immediately, and a previous episode where she's talking to Hera about, I think, something similar, right, in terms of bringing all Imperial craft and people into one spot, removal from a certain area. Of course, I think of, right, Rogue One and the tie-in between Rebels and Rogue One at that point. So I thought it was really neat how they're using a similar thing. You guys, I guess I would ask your help to know, is it the exact same order? Because I know in Rogue One, right, they're leaving the planet, right, for the Death Star to do the
The event, right, the evacuation.
You know, the event.
I remember hearing something after the fact, them calling it Protocol 13, but I don't think it was actually referenced to that in the actual movie.
That's pretty cool. Again, the connectivity in the ways, the leaps and bounds and the ways they bring all these threads together. So Thrawn shows up and we learn a bunch of interesting things right off the bat. First of all, this dome that's been in the capital of the city, it's actually not a building per se, but it is an actual ship that they are going to use as part of their evacuation of Lothal. And they can't do it because just like that, Thrawn shows up in the atmosphere with his Star Destroyer and showing yet again that he is very, very willing and capable of harming innocents for the purposes of the glory of the Empire. Now, in the Thrawn book, I don't think he did this to anyone. In fact, I very much believe he went out of his way to make sure no one innocent was harmed. So I'm hoping in the new Thrawn book that comes out this summer, where he's teaming up with Vader, I hope we see some sort of de-evolution of his character in that way. But Thrawn, I mean, Hera and Thrawn are perfect foils for one another, aren't they, Aaron? Because they both have very, very different views of, obviously, life and compassion. They're also very much strategicians, but
it definitely does. I mean, Hera and Thrawn are, for lack of a better term, cut from the same cloth. They're both brilliant strategicians. I can't even say that word. I'm not even going to try. But they're brilliant with strategy. And Thrawn just, there is no equal to Thrawn. And you're right, in the book, he went out of his way to avoid civilian casualties. When it came to the smugglers he was pursuing and fighting in that book. I got into a discussion about this exact topic with a friend of ours named Gary. And he brought this up about how the one thing he didn't like about this is how they turned Thrawn evil. I mean, he's just willing to blow up the civilian population. And at the same point, he does open fire on the civilian population. Absolutely, he does. He's got an ultimate goal at this point. He's got orders he's going to follow. I mean, obviously, from his goal is to get the unconditional surrender of Ezra Bridger. And Ezra sits there and tells him, you know what? I gotcha. You're too late. I got all your people trapped. All your troops. They're mine. I got them. There's nothing you can do. You need to leave. Get out of here. And Thrawn just reverses it on him at this point. It's like, you know what? No, you've actually done me a favor because all my people are safe now, so I can bombard the city all I want. No, none of my troops are going to get hurt unless you surrender. And he did open fire. He did open fire on the city to prove his point. I think, though, at the point, without trying to get into what happens later in the episode, he's got a motive. He's got somebody pushing him from behind to get this done. The Ezra is a must-have for him at this point, coming back from Coruscant. So
I get the impression, though, that he's doing this just to kind of show once again, hey, look at what I've accomplished for you now. You know what I mean? He doesn't seem to be scared of anything. And we see this quite a bit. We don't want to give away too much of what we're going to talk about in Rebels Reactions, but he's arguably the most evil character, not in Star Wars, that's the Emperor. I mean, there's no denying that. And Vader's no slouch in that category either. But Thrawn really has become very, very nasty and evil. And I don't know, it's never really been explored. I'm hoping that it is. I have faith that it will, because Thrawn is a very, very, very menacing, important character in Star Wars. So Ezra agrees to surrender, as Aaron said. And a lot of interesting things happened, kind of in a row. Tom, for one thing, Chopper and Ezra look at each other, and Chopper very much seems to already know this is going to happen. Ezra very casually hands Chopper his lightsaber. By the way, that was maybe the best look we've ever gotten at the hilt of Ezra's new lightsaber, so that was kind of fun. I'm very much a lightsaber junkie as far as that goes. And then he and Sabine, they don't have to say anything, but he'd said earlier, look, we no, you're going to have to trust me. And she does. So Ezra escapes. But before he does, he says to Hera, you know, well, do you have a different plan? And when that happened, when he said that, Tom, I very much exhaled because I was relieved because I didn't want him to surrender, but he tricked all of us. But I don't feel like it was, I mean, I think it had to be done. And in the way they all kind of react to it, I thought was appropriate. What did you think of that whole scene?
Yeah, that was such a moving scene because I had the same emotions as you did, Dan. When Hera said that there's got to be another way. Let's see what we have available. I thought, okay, Hera's gonna come and save the day. But you see the look with Chopper, and you go back to that relationship between Ezra and Sabine, and Ezra, I apologize for not remembering the exact quote, but he repeats something that Kanan says. Does anyone remember what that is that he says one more time? Is it one more time that he says
one more time?
and so I knew it was going to happen. And I love the moment when Sabine's on board with the plan and she draws everyone's attention away from the trapdoor that Chopper opens up above. And everyone turns their attention to, I forget if it's a map or something on the wall. Oh, it's a schematic of the dome. And then Hera says, this doesn't sound like such a bad idea. They all turn around and Ezra's gone. And they make an initial reaction to want to call him on the comlink or communicate with him, but they know it's over. One more time, this has to happen. Such a powerful moment, and I think we see so much growth in Ezra. I mean, I thought the entire episode 14, I saw Ezra as a very different person. Now he's got Kanan sort of inside of him, in his mind, and he's so much more sure of himself. In most cases, not all, he fights more like a Jedi, and here he makes a decision, not unlike, you know, Luke surrendering himself on Endor.
Ah, good call. Very good call. I hadn't thought of that. Well, I'm going to save my comments for the next one. It's going to be hard. I'm really looking forward to being on Aaron's show.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are the podcast you're looking for. This is...
Before we get to email, I want to thank our CWK sponsors, Wink, Harry's Razors, and the Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting app from Topps. Please support them the way they support our podcast. And remember to listen to new and archive shows of Coffee with Kenobi wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, Spreaker, Overcast, Blog Talk Radio, Player FM, or our website, www.coffeewithkenobi.com. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and Tumblr, and we'd love for you to check us out there. Be sure to listen to our CWK family of shows, too, including Legends Library, Rose Reactions, Comics with Kenobi, and Lattes with Leia. Please leave a review for each of their shows as well, and be sure to subscribe to each of them individually, as they all have their own iTunes feeds now. So we need to wrap up, but before we let everybody know where they can find all of you and your brilliant insights into Star Wars, it's such a pleasure to have all of you on. But give me your overall thoughts, Dave. We'll start with you on the first half of the finale, just what we've talked to up to this point where Ezra surrenders. I guess should we do a letter grade for the first half, Aaron, and then overall?
Sure, why not?
Okay, well, Dave, take it away.
Well, as in previous Rebels reactions, I've always, you know, you guys, I'm kind of a broken record when it comes to Twilight of the Apprentice. I know, Dan, for you, it's Twin Sons, and boy, that one's up there. But for me, it's been consistently Twilight of the Apprentice at the end of season two. So I always compare everything to that. With this episode, knowing what's coming next and what kind of grade I want to give that, I would give this, I think, an A- for me, whereas an A+ for the Twilight of the Apprentice doubleheader that time a couple years ago. So, and then just overall thoughts on this. I think it is a great start to finish this thing, just like Ezra says. I thought it was just incredibly creative, like I mentioned at the beginning of the of this podcast. But also, I just had a question for you guys. I'm throughout this whole thing, while Rook is tormenting our heroes on Lothal, the first thing I think about is, and I think it's something that Tom brought up, is when Sabine and Zeb have him, I just don't know why they paint him and send him back on the speeder. I'm like, no, keep him. And as I'm watching this entire episode, I'm just like, oh, no, we had this guy dead to rights. And so I'm just kind of curious why they sent him back on that speeder. But other than that, I'll give it an A- and just really enjoyed it.
Very good. Aaron, what about you?
Well, you know, the first half of this this finale set everything up perfectly for the second half. There was a lot of fun things that happened, a lot of excitement. And I mean, there's so much crammed into this, into the whole 90 minutes and even to the first 45 that you can't cover it all. There was definitely some great moments. I love how when the wolves are going through and tossing stormtroopers around like ragdolls, Gregor is standing there and goes, "Look, wolf, you got your wolf pack back." I mean, to me, that was, I laughed so hard when that happened. I mean, because it was perfect. And he's like, "And they just fight like old boys too." I mean, it was just, it was a great nod to the Clone Wars and to Wolf, because he's by far a fan favorite of next to right up there with Rex coming out of the Clone Wars. You always hear about Captain Rex and Commander Wolf. I mean, those were the two clone commanders everybody loved. I mean, he was Plo Koon's Jedi commander, or clone commander, correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
yes. So definitely a fan favorite. And of course, I love my Chopper. I mean, I love seeing him take out a few stormtroopers through the thing. And this overall was just a lot of fun. For this, if I have to grade this part individually for the first half of the finale, I would go to, for the first half, I'm going with a solid A for the first half, because it was the perfect setup for what's coming.
Very, very true. Very, very true, my friend. Tom, what about you? Overall thoughts on kind of what we talked about so far, and what kind of grade would you give what we've seen to this point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Aaron, I agree with you. I'm going to grade it right away and say solid A. I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, and if we weren't in a situation where we were doing duo or two episodes a week, I this would be anticipation massive for 7 days. But I really enjoyed this episode for a lot of the same reasons you all liked it. You know, the all-star cast that was back for very good reasons, and not just to have them back because it's the end of the show. It all fits. It all makes sense. You know, the grand strategy of Filoni here was working, and it's working on all cylinders.
As do I. And I would say just the first episode itself, A Fool's Hope, I probably would have given that a B or a B+. I liked it fine, but I think we were just so spoiled by what happened in the two previous episodes, or not two, but the two previous airings, that being, of course, Kanan's fate and then the triumphant return of Ahsoka, and where Star Wars went in ways we didn't even expect. But I would give the first part of it probably a B, and then the second half, or the first half, more appropriately, of the farewell, I'd probably give it a solid A also. It's got some important things that are setting up some very, very powerful moments that we have got to get to. And speaking of that, as we have said it repeatedly, if you want to hear the second part of this discussion, we would love to have you join us. We're going to do that on Rebels Reactions. And I believe, Aaron, that is going to air this Friday, correct?
That is correct.
All right. So that will be Friday. Let me grab my calendar here. Friday is on, what day is that? That's the 9th. Friday the 9th. Very good. So Friday the 9th, we get to hear the second part of this where we tackle some amazing things. So we'll leave it there. And gentlemen, I guess I forgot to mention, Craig had to depart a little bit ago, so we will not be able to tell him goodbye, but I will put a link to the show notes where you can find him, absolutely. Aaron, Tom, and Dave, where can everybody find all of your contributions to Star Wars fandom?
Well, for me, it's simple. Rebels Reactions is the best place to look me up currently. Even though it's winding down, I still will have that up and running on Twitter at Rebels Reactions. My personal Twitter's at TAHarris121079. Those are the two best places to get a hold of me to follow all my Star Wars antics, because there's a lot of them.
I'll go ahead. Mine's real simple. I'm the simplest of all, I think, always. It's always on Twitter at my first name, David, _, and my last name is Modders, MODDERS.
And you can catch me on Coffee with Kenobi every week with the news. And on Twitter, you can catch me at Draftline.
Very, very good. Well, we will go ahead then and wrap up the show. Thank you so much to everybody for joining us and for listening to and supporting Coffee with Kenobi and for contributing to Star Wars Conversation. We will definitely be back next week with two new co-hosts and more Star Wars discussion. In the meantime, be sure to listen to part two of our Star Wars Rebels series finale analysis on Rebels Reactions. This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.
Hey, Star Wars fans, huge news. Finn himself, John Boyega, is coming to AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. Get ready to geek out March 30th through April 1st of 2018. For more info and tickets, visit www.awesomecon.com.